Errol Ballantyne, driving you home with the music you love today on Radio Today.
Right now, it's a very warm welcome in studio to Clive Scott. Hello, Clive.
Hello, Errol. Fancy meeting you here.
Amazing, you know. Thank you for coming through. I'm sure there's hardly anybody who is listening who doesn't know your name. And you come up in all
kinds
of...
They know the name. They can't put a face to it.
Good face radio. One of the biggest ones, of course, was Villages. And
Villages.
You were in that for about 103 years,
no,
weren't you?
We did, I think, 78 episodes over about 3 years. Mm. Now you do 78 episodes in 78 days. Mm. It just shows the difference in the way the whole thing is speeded up. And then, of course, I repeated the same character, Ted Dixon, in Isidingo for the first 4 years. And then they didn't know what to do with me, or, you know, my bar had been taken over. It was BEE takeover in the bar, and Aggie took over. And that was the end. I didn't really have a character to play outside of the bar. Mm. At least they didn't know what to do with me. Mm.
Especially such a kind of a dimwit, because you were a bit of a dimwit. I didn't quite know what was going on.
No, but I mean that was the whole charm
of
the guy. I think absolutely typecast. Yes.
Now I did a couple of quite a few things for Isidingo, different characters, and we used to shoot an episode in a day.
Yes,
which is about right. Yeah,
they're all doing that now. Yeah. An episode a day. It's tough work, you know.
Yes.
You're earning your money. Mm. Half the time you're having to make up what the lines are or whatever, you know. Play the situation.
And the call sheet says 5:30 on set, and it's all about hurry up and wait.
Yes.
And you hang around and you hang
but
around.
But it's always the same. Yeah. I mean, filming is even worse.
Isn't it just, hey?
Yes.
You know, you've got to be on set at 7 o'clock in the morning. You finally get to shoot your scene at 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So you take your books and you and you hang around.
If you're clever, you take books. And
otherwise, you just stare into space.
And eat. You never stop eating biscuits and coffee.
At the craft table, yes.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about, I haven't got any notes in front of me at all,
that's
so we're kind of just winging
fine.
This, but I know that you spent some time in the UK. Now, if I remember
12
correctly,
years. 12
you,
years.
You went for a holiday.
Yes.
And you forgot your passport, or you just
decided
not to come back?
No, I went for 3 months.
Yes.
And I worked in Denmark and Sweden and Germany, selling books to the American forces and all that sort of thing, and trying to sell vacuum cleaners in North London, where you'd knock on a door. And somebody would say, yes, what do you want? We would say, could I come in? No, I was nearly raped last week. Well, I mean, let me in. We'll see what we can do. No, I didn't actually say that.
But, no, I didn't think you would actually.
Yes. But that was hard work too. Didn't sell one vacuum cleaner.
Well, but that led you on to more important things,
yes.
which is theatre. One of your big things there was a Mousetrap. Talk about that.
Oh, The Mousetrap must be the worst play in the world. But it's almost like doing your national service. You get into The Mousetrap and you're there for a year. Not the greatest money in the world, but, you know, it's regular. You get it every week. So you sign up for a week and you have, you know where your laughs are for the first 3 months, and then the laughs disappear and nobody comes near you. You don't know. You think, where did that laugh go? It was there somewhere. What am I doing now that is different to what I did at the beginning? But, you know, that's the way things work out. And
what character did you play?
I played Christopher Wren.
Okay.
Who is a strange young man. He's usually been played slightly, I don't know, I suppose slightly fey.
Yes.
With a G.
Mm? But it was a good experience for you. I mean, you had a lot of fun, I would think, living in London. And
look, it's hard work, but I probably spent more time working as a waiter. Hmm. And I used to model also for Simpsons and Dax clothes, all the Simpsons line. And I also used to draw unemployment at the same time, which is very naughty of me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just had to struggle to keep things on track. You did whatever you could. Do you know those steel ball things that hang from a frame and you pull one and it goes duck, 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 duck? One of my jobs was assembling those things in a basement of a place in Fulham.
Okay.
A dreadful, dreadful job. Yeah. I mean, you know, and then I was a toy packer at Harrods, where all you saw all these gentlemen wearing three-piece suits and pearl tie-pins and things, pushing barrows along underneath underneath Harrods. They've all these sort of passages, Frosty Way and Hans Crescent and everything, which go under Brompton Road to places on the other side of the road. It's quite amazing.
Now, you're a very fine character actor, and I was wondering
Would you write that down, please?
Yes, please. The check is in the post. But I was wondering what sort of formal training you had. Did you go to drama school?
I did go to drama school.
Did you go to where?
I was a drawing room comic, and I hadn't been married long, and we were walking past South Kensington, a place called the Webber Douglas School, which was a theatre school. And I jokingly said to my ex-wife, I said, "Oh, I'd like to be an actor." She said, "Do you mean that?" I said, "Yes." Well, she said, "Get in there." And I said, "Well, it's closed at the moment." "All right," she said, "Monday, get in there." And I went in there, and much to my surprise, when they said to me, "What experience have you had?" And I said, "Well, I played a jam tin in a school play, and I was also a weasel in Toad of Toad Hall.
I was
Hall.
The third tree from the left." Yes.
And they said, "Is that all?" And I said, "Yes." Well, I was much my surprise. I was accepted, and for the first 18 months, I thought, gosh, these guys are so good. They'd all done amateur dramatics and things. I'd never done anything like that. Mm. And then the wonderful thing was that by the end of 2 years, I thought, gosh, you know, I'm as good as these guys in different ways. But it was quite a learning experience for me. I suppose a lesson in confidence to a certain extent, which took me another 20 years to get. But, I mean, that was part of the beginning.
You know, just sort of related to that, I was reading a website of yours when, and I don't know how long ago you wrote this, but
quite a long time, because I've forgotten the password to get into it.
It says what you wrote was, "We live in a time where the mind seems to rule everything. Not a bad thing when one looks at what emotions can do, but eventually the mind becomes an ogre that takes over everything. If things can no longer be weighed or quantified, the mind dismisses them as inconsequential or of no importance." You also talk about world greed, and just talk about that. What do you mean that the mind can take over and become an ogre for you?
Well, your mind is something that weighs and balances and analyzes all the time. But we forget that every great religion says God is one. So what are we analyzing? Obviously, one needs the mind. You know, thank goodness for people like Einstein, but they knew the mind on a higher level. They could see the unity of mind and the unity of the universe. You know, when he said that the universe is circular, so that everything that goes from you, a thought, a word, a deed, whatever it is, will return to you. And the Hindus, of course, said years ago, karma, whatever goes from you is going to come back. So that energy is impersonal. God doesn't punish you. You have to learn the law, and the law of cause and effect. Law of cause and effect. And that is why, I suppose, all the great teachers, like a Jesus or whoever, said, love one another. Because if you love each other, you're not likely to do harmful things to each other. In fact, Buddha said, if you loved yourself enough, you would never harm another being. Interesting that. If you loved yourself enough.
And that's what essentially is their practice. You just don't harm any other living creature.
You try not to.
Well, you try not to.
It's difficult because, you know, this is where the emotions rise up, and you go past a taxi and he salutes you with that one finger and you immediately feel like attacking him. And instead of saying, bless you on your way.
But, I mean, we have so much pressure on us, don't we? Not only here, but, I mean, around the world, people, there's so much pressure to perform, produce, behave in a certain way. I think we very often don't sit back and just look at ourselves and say, who are we and what are we doing and where are we going? And instead of which we strive to beat the next person to the robot and to the next person to get the biggest buck, and it goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And this is essentially what you're talking about. What you're also saying is that you say we know something without reference to anything else.
When you do, that's an intuitive thing. You know, you can analyze to death, and then suddenly you get that moment, aha.
Yes.
And it's almost like you had to do the analysis in order to give yourself permission to know something, to know it. And then just chuck out all the analysis and say, aha, I see what it's all about. I know what it's all about.
But we so
this is becoming a very esoteric
it is, hey.
Discussion. We're full of, I wonder what people out there are thinking.
They're thinking, who is he talking about? No, who is he talking to? I'm talking to Clive Scott in studio. Just, I wanted to ask you about this because I find this very interesting. And also our brain is full of clutter. There's so much stuff in our head, you know. Yes. But the thing about the aspect of love and understanding and compassion and all that important on this day as well, because that was one of Madiba's or part of Madiba's great legacy. It's just a pity that we haven't followed that. And I don't know where we go to from here in terms of following that. But for me, that is the essence of what life is all about. Understanding, compassion, love, tolerance.
Well, you know, I don't know whether this is true or not, but I've heard that when he was in jail, he had this seminal moment when he recognized Gandhi's harmlessness. You know, that harmlessness in thought, word, and deed. Ahimsa, it's called. And if you practice harmlessness in thought, word, and deed, your life becomes a lot simpler. You don't have to always compete or have to be better or this or that. You know, Shakespeare had it all when he said to be or not to be. That is the question. Either we're going to be who we are, or we're going to try and be who our
we
friends, our church, our state, or whatever it is says we should be. And you know, it's rather like saying to a rose, you must grow pawpaws. And the rose says, what the hell are you talking about? I want to be the best rose I can be. Thank goodness.
Right. Moving on, there are two other things. Now, Clive, you are at the rooftop market, which is no longer here in Rosebank, is it?
No, it's
moved
now above
Norwood.
Above Norwood, Pick and Pay, up on the parking area. It's the rooftop market, and it's wonderful, and I urge people to come and have a look at it. But I suppose one of the reasons I'm here is also to try and punt my show.
Yes, we're coming to that in just... You can see I've got nothing to refer to,
really,
but in my
really
head. So, just tell us quickly, rooftop market, you do palm reading.
I read
You're
palms
there every
at the rooftop market
Sunday.
Every Sunday.
Yes, we're from when to when is the market on?
It usually opens from 9 to about 4, half past 4, even 5 o'clock.
Okay.
Depending on how busy they are.
Yes. And you've been doing that for the longest time.
I've been reading. Look, I don't know how good at palm reading I am, but I try to make people feel better about themselves.
Yes.
Just to accept themselves, to give themselves a pat on the back, to be nice to themselves.
Yeah.
After all, we're only works in progress. None of us is the final article. We never will be.
Mm.
You know, we're trying to do the best we can. So just be a bit gentler with yourself.
And then tell us about the show. You are on stage. You have a new show which you've written. It's a kind of summary of your life, yes?
I haven't really written anything.
Well, it's in your head.
But it's all these stories that I've been telling for years about my childhood and my going to England and working in the bank and goodness knows what. And it's called Warts and All.
Warts and All.
Warts and All. And I will be doing it on Tuesday, the 10th of December at the Atterbury Theatre in Pretoria.
That's now,
I'm
next
afraid,
Tuesday.
Yes, next Tuesday. Unfortunately, that's probably outside the footprint, but I would urge all listeners, if you have any friends in Pretoria, phone them and tell them to tell two other people that the show is on at the Atterbury.
But wait, there's more, because in January you're at the Foxwood.
No, February.
Sorry, February.
February from the 21st of February. I'm at the Foxwood Theatre in Houghton.
Yes.
Which will be Friday, Saturday, Sunday for 3 weeks.
Wonderful.
It was four, but I don't know what happened.
Where is the booking?
It will probably be at the CompuTicket is taking the booking for the Pretoria show.
Yes.
And I imagine Foxwood may be doing the same. I'm not quite sure yet. It's a bit far ahead.
All right. When the time... But don't forget, Pretoria, on next Tuesday.
Atterbury Tuesday Theatre, the 10th, 7:30. And you can go to CompuTicket, but tell all your friends over there.
There you go. Clive Scott, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Errol.
Break a leg with your show.
I thought we were going on for another hour or two.
Well, nearly.
But thank you, Errol.
Thank you,
Clive. And nice to make contact again.
Thank you.
1485 AM.